is, yay. Good morning, everybody. Today is April 22nd, and this is the Senate's Public Safety Budget Division. We have two bills to hear today. We're going to start with, here's Sandy. Ken, you want to tell Sandy? Senator Pappas, will you have a short conversation with Mr. Backus?
Okay.
I understand that there's an amendment made. I think we'll start with Senator Moy's bill, Senate File 561, and I'm going to present that from up here. So, members, it looks like we have an A3 delete all amendment. So I will offer the A3 amendment. You have it right there? Okay. All in favor of adopting the A3 author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. This is what Senator Moy calls the juvenile data collection bill. States are required to collect and share racial and ethnic data with the Department of Justice, Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, and create a plan to address the disparities in, as one of our four core requirements of the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act. As required, while some data is currently collected by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, OJP, not all of the data are collected, and jurisdictions collect data differently with no uniformity regarding race and ethnicity.
Okay.
Accurate data will allow us to get a better picture of the youth involved in the system at all steps of the process, and it will help us to have a deeper understanding of what drives disproportionate minority contact. The data can be analyzed to determine how best to improve the system, to create better outcomes for all youth and families, protect public safety, ensure equitable justice, and use taxpayer resources more effectively and efficiently. For example, with the analysis of secure detention populations by race and connected reasons for detention, we can ensure that youth are placed in secure detention fairly and for the most appropriate offenses, and that the justice system's most expensive public policy tool is used wisely. Without data, it's more difficult to determine the best solutions to improving the system and using our limited resources more wisely if we don't actually know who's there and why. The bill, as we amended it, will now have a one-year study group that will define the decision points, implementation, and potential cost of the original bill, and it will and we'll ask the study group to address concerns that were raised, such as the data privacy of youth in smaller counties, a distinction that the summary data will be used and not individual identifiers. We will ask them to assess the fiscal impact to counties and help us develop an implementation plan that would allow relevant systems to collect and report the data. So getting this group together and getting the information back from them should offer us a tangible first step toward the necessary data collection to monitor and evaluate the effectiveness and the equity in Minnesota's juvenile justice system. And so I believe there are a couple of folks who want to testify quickly, Mr. Banks and Ms. Or Professor Levy Pounds. If you'd both come up to the table. We'd start by introducing yourself, and whoever would like to go first, please do.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Artika Tyner, and I will be standing in for Professor Nakima Levy Pounds. I'm an attorney and educator at the University of St. Thomas School of Law and the Community Justice Project.
Madam Chair, my name is Roger Banks, and committee members, my name is Roger Banks. I'm the policy and research analyst for the Council on Black Minnesotans.
Welcome to you both. Who'd like to start?
I will start, Madam Chair. Just to reiterate a few points that you had outlined earlier, this bill is important, and it's a very important first step to analyzing the data related to juvenile justice and also to promote juvenile justice reform. The federal government requires states to collect and share racial and ethnic data. However, currently in Minnesota, as you had referenced earlier, some jurisdictions are collecting this data, while others are experiencing a lack of uniformity in this information. And this is especially important because of the disproportionate minority contact in Minnesota's juvenile justice system. And I will just highlight a few of the statistics that outline the current situation that we can see. Minnesota is among 8 states with the highest disparities between white and minority youth in juvenile custody. So that is a ratio of 5-1. And also the rate among minority youth is 3 times higher for their arrest rate than white youth. And minority youth are about 2.5 times more likely to have cases referred to secure detention. If we just put this in real terms in light of the experiences that we have in the Community Justice Project and that we engage our students in doing judicial ride-alongs and visiting the juvenile detention center, this overrepresentation is something that we can see with our eyes in both situations. In addition, this data will help us to identify patterns in decision-making and get a clear picture of what's happening in the juvenile justice system. And that information will help us to develop a plan to eliminate DMC, the disproportionate minority contact. We will begin to explore questions related to equity and fairness, such as are similarly situated youth being treated fairly, and what is leading to some of the racial disparities that we can see. This bill is also an important step in dismantling the pipeline to prison. The Children's Defense Fund last year published a report called The Cradle to the Prison Pipeline. And one of the things that it highlighted is that evidence shows that being incarcerated in secure detention as a youth is one of the greatest predictors of also being incarcerated in adult detention. And finally, this is a great opportunity also to use public safety dollars wisely. It costs roughly about $311 per day to incarcerate a young person in detention, compared to $60 per day for detention alternative programs. And according to the Children's Defense Fund studies, this exceeds the cost of quality education by 3.7%. So basically what this means is that we could use taxpayers' dollars wisely by investing it in education and community-based alternatives that have proven success in the lives of young people. I just would like to, in closing, just remind the committee that this is an opportunity to transform the juvenile justice system, to change the way that we currently do things by looking at the data and coming up with creative solutions of how can we dismantle this pipeline to prison. And I would like to just leave with one final quote that I've encouraged my students to read and to reflect upon, and using their imagination to think of what would this community look like in Minnesota if we make changes related to juvenile justice. And this is a quote from the Children's Defense Fund that asks us to imagine for me an America where jail is not my only destination when I make a mistake, an America that invests in prevention and early intervention and helps children learn from their mistakes so that detention and incarceration of children is the absolute last resort. This is an America that puts more of its resources towards making a better student and less toward my incarceration. This is America for children. So this committee has the opportunity to further that vision with this bill in transforming the way we look at juvenile justice and taking a deeper look at disproportionate minority contact and promoting equity and fairness. Thank you for your time and
Thank
consideration.
You very much. Mr. Banks. And I should just say this for both of the bills that we have up today. We have to be out of here in 15 minutes. So brevity is the soul of wit today. And we will, and I apologize for the very short time, but this is the fiscal committee, and so we're,
thank
we're just
you.
Trying to get these two bills out. Mr. Banks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I will be brief. I would just like to, what has been said about the rationale has already been very clearly delineated. I mean, its importance. But the Council on Black Minnesotans also has another concern about this type of bill, and that is it's really critical for policymakers and program administrators to have accurate information so that they might be able to develop the appropriate types of public policy that will maximize not only the resources in the state, but maximize the opportunities that are available for incarcerated youth, and particularly the kind of treatment aspects. And so what I'd just like to say essentially is that when this group, the study group, is put together, the council would be more than happy to participate in this process and make any kind of contribution that you deem necessary. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'll thank you in advance for being participants in the study group as we go along. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would assume that the I'm a member of the statewide Children's Justice Initiative, mm-hmm. and I would assume they, although they are not listed specifically, they would be part of this. And my question, I have actually two questions. One is, since there's no fiscal note attached to this, then I would assume that the OJP just is going to absorb the cost of doing this study.
Correct.
Is that correct?
I see the representative from OJP shaking her, nodding her head yes in the,
she's
in the
so
back.
Kind. And my other question, Madam Chair, is the cost of implementing the plan. Who's going to be in charge of implementing the plan? I understand there will be a cost after you get the study done, but who will be in charge of the plan?
Well, I think, Senator Rosen, once we get the information from the study group, then trying to figure out how to implement the plan
would be
our job, the Judiciary Committee and this committee and the greater legislature.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions? If not, Senator Rosen moves that Senate File 561 is amended, be recommended to pass, and it goes to Big Finance. On that motion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair and members, those of you who are in the policy committee may remember this bill. It's about sex trafficking. Some call it sex slavery. Sex traffickers who sell human beings for sex and patrons who buy other human beings for sex are committing a crime and must be held accountable. Women and girls who are trafficked for the purpose of commercial sexual exploitation, including prostitution, are victims of crime. Sex trafficking is not limited to foreign nationals. Girls and women from Minnesota are regularly trafficked into prostitution in Minnesota. Sex traffickers and patrons include both Minnesota-born and foreign-born individuals. Minnesota law does not limit sex trafficking to cases involving force, fraud, or coercion, nor does Minnesota law require transportation or movement across a border. Minnesota law recognizes that one can never consent to being trafficked. Members, this legislation, which is the omnibus human trafficking bill, the bulk of it comes from the Advocates for Human Rights, which did an extensive study, and I have Mary Ellison with me, who's going to be talking about their sections of the bill. It also includes provision section one from Senator Ortman of the First Engrossment, who, and this is amending the Commissioner of Public Safety's duty to gather data on human trafficking to publishing a report every 2 years instead of 1 year so that there's a better opportunity to get the data. It also includes Section 2, the ability of a victim of human trafficking to bring a civil lawsuit against a person or entity engaged in labor trafficking. Section 3 is another provision of the bill, which is a bill of mine, and I have an amendment that I'll introduce in a minute to clarify this, and this does require retail licensees. Retail licensees are people who sell liquor, who have been cited by local licensing authorities as a location for sex trafficking, to post a warning sign that says engaging in sex trafficking is a crime. And we do have a Minnesota crisis and tip line that is contract. We contract with civil society to run that tip line right now. Section 4 of the bill, it begins the advocates' recommendations on how we can clarify our statute so that we're better able to prosecute both labor and sex trafficking. I'm going to ask Mary Ellison to just make a short comment and then to explain those sections.
Ms. Ellison, welcome.
Well, she gets a chance to talk too.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Ellison. I'm a staff attorney at the Advocates for Human Rights. Thank you to all of the bill authors, especially Senator Pappas, Senator Moi, Senator Berglund, Senator Rosen, and Senator Limmer. I'd like to tell you a story that illustrates the need for Minnesota to have stronger tools for those enforcing and implementing the law on human trafficking. At the beginning of April, a group of concerned citizens learned that a local Minneapolis club would be the site of an event hosting a Las Vegas promoter whose work includes videos that teach young men how to be pimps and sex traffickers. The group organized a response, contacted the mayor of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis City Council to express concern. Both the mayor's office and city council looked into the event, asked the Minneapolis City Police to have a presence, and checked to see if the club was in violation of its license in any way. At 9 p.m. on April 5th, more than 70 concerned citizens staged a protest outside the club with at least four marked and one unmarked squad cars standing watch. Dozens of vehicles drove up to the club. Many individuals walked up to the club. Many were deterred from entering to learn about selling human beings for sex. But too many individuals looked at our signs and laughed when they saw the message that sex trafficking and promoting prostitution in Minnesota is illegal. The fact is, they know and we know that most pimps and sex traffickers are not convicted for sex trafficking, and if they are, they rarely are imprisoned. Today, you have the power to change this and to send a strong, clear message that Minnesota will arrest, charge, convict, and imprison those who receive, recruit, entice, harbor, provide, or obtain by any means another person for the purpose of prostitution. Concerned citizens are doing their part to combat this grave human rights violation. We urge you to pass Senate File 1514.
Thank you, Ms. Ellison.
Okay, starting with Section 4 is the advocate section, and Ms. Ellison is going to explain all the advocate sections.
Ms. Ellison, just a reminder, we have about 5 minutes left to get all the work of this bill done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, Section 4.
Madam Chair, would you rather we not explain the bill and just talk about the money?
Yes.
Oh,
this is
all
the finance
right.
division.
That was clear. Then, sorry about that. Since this did come through Policy Committee, and Senator Torres-Ray is also here with me, she has several provisions in the bill coming from the city of Minneapolis that are also trying to get after the Johns and the places of prostitution rather than continuing to prosecute the victims. Let's do two amendments. The A4 amendment was suggested by Senator Moy during Policy Committee, and there's been some work done in this area. It's part of the public place section. We could adopt the A4 amendment.
Okay, we'll get that distributed.
And then you might as well pass out the A3 amendment, which clarifies the sign section that we're just talking about sex trafficking, not labor trafficking.
Okay.
With the sign.
I think
requirements.
We all have the A4 amendment. You include in the definition of public place steam room, sauna, massage parlor, shopping mall, and other public shopping areas. All right. All in favor of adopting the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A3 amendment deletes a reference to labor trafficking and then the section.
We're deleting, reference. Madam Chair, we're deleting labor trafficking from the warning sign.
From the warning sign. Okay, good. All right. Any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pat.
Okay, Madam Anything Chair, then we have a very long and extensive fiscal note, 12 pages.
It has nothing on it.
And it has nothing on it.
Yeah,
right.
It's a lovely thing.
Lovely.
I was interested in the sentence that said that no offenders have been sentenced for labor trafficking since 2005. We have a ways to go, don't we? All right, so Senator Pappas, you have a bill that has a zero fiscal note, and we've put it in order for you, and I think, unless you have anything to wrap up, we can send you on your way to big finance.
Okay.
Anything else? Senator Foley?
It has nothing to do with the money. I just wanted to ask the question, what kind of enforcement activities are occurring in the Twin City area, for instance?
Enforcement activities.
St.
Paul Police Sergeant, Sergeant Bandebeer, heads up the trafficking. The Gerald Vick Trafficking Task Force. And the task force is the one that's in charge of enforcement activities. So a lot of it is also educating and training law enforcement, prosecutors, and social service agencies to recognize victims and make sure they get referred for services, and the and then there's an opportunity to go after the traffickers.
And I assume Minneapolis has a similar provision somewhere.
I think Minneapolis is part of the task force.
Oh, okay.
Which is led by the St. Paul Police Department.
Okay. It's a metro-wide or statewide task force.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Good.
The overall, Madam Chair, is that we're really not doing very much.
We can do more. I think the appropriate answer might be. Okay. Senator Ingebretson moves Senate File 1514 as amended be recommended to pass, and it goes to Big Finance. All in favor of adopting that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you all. We're done.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
Okay. Thank you.